Okay, we're going to go ahead and reconvene the Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting. Up next on the agenda is item number 5, discussion and possible action, approval of the minutes for July the 5th, 2016.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for July 5th, 2016.
I'll second that motion.
Been moved in second. You have a question on this, Mr.?
Come on
up, Mr. Phillips.
Yeah, Mark Phillips, Story County resident. In regards to the minutes that you're about to approve for July 5th, the public package refers to those as the agenda, so it's just a typo that the minutes should be the minutes and not labeled as agenda.
Okay. Thank you. We'll note the correction.
Thank you, Mark.
Any other public comment regarding the minutes? Okay, I have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 6. This is a consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion.
I'll move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second that motion.
Been moved and second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 7, discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. And since it's been a while since we've been blessed with the presence of Mr. Gallagher, can we have a report out of the comptroller's office today?
Yay!
It's happening.
He's back.
He's alive.
No shorts, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Gilman, Commissioner McGuffey, Mr. Whitten, I'm really glad to see you guys. contrary to all the rumors, this is not a body makeover by Jenny Craig. I want to thank you for all the cards, prayers, flowers. I've never seen flowers like that in my entire life, Lance. I certainly appreciate it. All the good stuff, because it does help. From a staff report type, the two gals have been phenomenal. I have not gotten any calls, any drama or anything. Part of it, I think, has been because of pretty much a gag order that I think the county manager put on. But other than that, they have been remarkable, as everybody has, and I certainly appreciate it. I did my first rehab yesterday, which I thought was great until about 5 o'clock this morning, when I woke up and remember those the first day after basketball practice, Marshall. Jeez. So I got to take the day to take a look at that and then go back with a little more energy tomorrow. So that's what I've got. So thank you so much for all the support. Appreciate it. And I should be back soon. I go see the surgeon tomorrow, and hopefully he'll kick me loose.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Welcome back, Mr. Gallagher.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Well, community chest and the library and all the other good stuff that goes on. Anything for Mr. Griffin today? Nothing today? Okay. Let's see. Over at the Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Antonoro?
Just one thing today. Reminder to everybody, tonight is National Night Out. This year we're only doing it in the Lockwood area due to a lack of resources and staffing availability. So we'll have it in Lockwood this year from 4 to 7 p.m. And next year we'll hopefully be doing it again on both sides of the county. But if not, then it'll be up there in Virginia City next year. So hope to see everybody down there.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I think you have anything.
Okay.
All right. So, why don't we move over to the Fire Protection District, and we'll have Battalion Chief Nevin today.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, Jeff Nevin. This past month, I'm sure you were aware, we had a pretty significant fire in the north end of the county, 1,275 acres. It's completely contained at this point. We spent about 5 days out there monitoring after it was completely contained, mopped up, and put to bed. So hopefully we won't have any issues out there. We'd like to thank the staff and especially Manager Witten for his help with the PIO in that area. We had a lot of media on that. We've got personnel currently out, one in Wyoming. We've got one of our bulldozers out on the Virginia Mountain or Complex. Those fires out there by Pyramid Lake. An engine in, we sent them to Utah and they ended up back in Nevada, so over in Caliente. And then, of course, we had the two BLM line of duty deaths earlier in the month that we participated in through our honor guard, the memorial services and processions. So that was an honor for us to be asked to participate along with all the other agencies. Other than that, we received our new ambulance for Lockwood through the community development grant or block grant process, so it's in service down there. Any questions for me?
Anything for Jeff today?
No? Great job on putting out the fire.
Thank you.
That was a tough one there.
Yeah, it was. We had the Mother Nature working against us that day. If it hadn't been for the wind, we probably picked it up pretty quickly. So.
Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Okay, over to emergency management. Mr. Curtis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Mr. Gilman, Mr. McGuffey, and our county manager. Just a couple of items to kind of give you a heads up on. One, Sharon Evan and I just returned from a conference in Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, which pretty neat little community. Kind of a hassle getting there, but it was directed towards historic preservation, and with Sherry's involvement with community factors and my involvement with the Historic District Commission as the chair, we attended this at a grant from through the State Office of Historic Preservation, and we were able to take away a lot of things. It was a 3 days of good solid information that we were able to receive. And there's probably three items that in particular that I kind of took away from that to bring back relating to historic preservation of our community. And that is a session that I attended that had to do with the interaction between our Comstock Historic District Commission, which is unique in the respect that it is a state legislated commission that is, the positions are appointed by the governor. And it is one of maybe one or two others in the entire nation that are set up that way, because most historic districts are all either city organizations or city departments or county departments, if you will, reporting generally to a state office of historic preservation. So the interaction between our historic district commission and the county government and so forth is unique, and it's something that we're going to be looking at a little bit more closely to make sure that we have everything in place to make sure that we are working together effectively and in the right legal venues, I guess you could say. The other thing that I took back out of it was that it's really important, and we probably have failed in the past in this respect, to educate our community, our historic residents who live within the historic district of Virginia City down through Silver City and into Dayton, about what the Historic District Commission does and the fact that that it's not something there to regulate them, it's something there to help preserve the historic fabric of these communities. A comment that a fellow said one of the speakers mentioned was, as members of a commission, we look at it and we say, we're here to preserve the history. And the public tends to look at it and says, you're here to regulate us. And so we need to look at breaking that down somewhat. The other one is a subject matter that has to do with convincing our owners and occupants of historic structures and buildings in the areas to work to upkeep their structures, their buildings, their residences, because that is part of the economy of our community, where they come in and look around and see that. So those are probably the three things that I took away, and I think that it will be well served having had attended that conference, which was a national conference, by the way. The other item is that we're continuing to plan and make ready for our annual hazardous materials response training session that will be held this year with AZZ. The galvanizing people out in the industrial complex. We'll be meeting with them again and finalizing some of the plans here shortly for that training session. And then just a quick reminder also, I mentioned at one of the last meetings that we have the Sutro site tours that will be coming up in September 24th and 25th. And although that is not specifically history of Virginia City, it is history of Virginia City, because that Sutro, although it is in Lyon County, is so tightly tied to the history of Virginia City and the Comstock, and as well as Dayton, that it is part of our economic structure, if you will, in our historical fabric to identify people with that. So that is planning is continuing September 24th and 25th. We already have about 150 people signed up for it, and we'll be capping it at 400. Our visitors center, Denny Dotson and his group, have been influential in helping us market that. From my standpoint, I'm just merely one of the presenters and kind of one of the historians that relate to that. So I guess that is about all from me. And if there's any particular questions anyone has,
I'd like to quiet him just a little bit too. Okay. Do you have any questions?
Jill, if you would, I think at this morning's staffing meeting, you mentioned your observations about the lack of a museum showcase,
and yes.
I thought you might want to.
Thank you. Yeah. One of the, probably item number four that I took away from this conference, and because they took us to several museums that we were able to look at, was it kind of dawned on me that I thought, you know, we have the Fourth Ward School, which is great, talking about the schooling's history. We have the Fireman's Museum about the fire history. We have the Fourth Ward School about the mining history. But we really don't have a county museum that talks about how the county came up and the people that were involved in the history of not just Virginia City, but the history of Lockwood, and because it has a vital history within the county's history itself. The McCarran Ranch, the Painted Rock area, even the Highlands, you know, it sure their history goes back roughly to, say, 1970, but that is part of the history of the county anymore, and we don't have a place to do that. And I think maybe for the future we should be thinking about developing a county museum that speaks to the history of our county. So that was my thought.
I think that's been battered around a couple of times just in conversation. Maybe the Pierce property, if we decide to try to purchase that for the train to turn that into a museum, I don't know. That was, like I said, we're just kind of batting ideas around. But that would be a large enough facility, maybe. Who knows?
That's good to hear that there's some talk out there about it. I think the future hopefully would hold that for us.
And if I may tag on to that, Commissioner McGuffey, you know, I think another, at least interim, if not long-term, depending on the size and the positioning, is we have a committee that I think has its first meeting about August 17th, as I recall, and it's to look at how to utilize the space downstairs in the jail. The Doug Gist with the Peace Officers Museum left every display case, which was a phenomenal, incredible donation on his part. And through a large group of people, but a very talented also group of people, which includes Joe, it includes Ron Gallagher, includes Laura Mathers, and includes Elise from State Historic Preservation Office, Sherry Nevin, Mel Keener. We've got these display cases, and I think our angle right now would be to position that as kind of a self-guided, walk-through museum. It won't always be open when it's functioning as a conference center, but it won't be a conference center all that often either. So we've got the display cases. We've got the LED lighting, which is historically correct, I guess, if you're an archivist or a preservist or whatever. We've got the secured plexiglass with the security screws. And we will have, thanks to Mel Keener, we will have 24/7 surveillance in there as well. So I think we can definitely take some of these display cases. I know Commissioner Gilman definitely chimed in when he was made the honorary mayor of Lockwood a few weeks back, that Lockwood has quite a rich history that they'd like to display a piece of. We do, or you have some that I bet you I could beg, borrow, and I won't steal, but, you know, get some displays. Steve Frady does. The Fourth Ward is very anxious to work with us. They have a lot of rotating stuff, any lease from Shippo, things like the Aqua Wanzer bottle back, back in the day. So I think at least as an interim, Commissioner McGuffey, if not longer term, it won't have docents, it won't have all that pizzazzy stuff, but, you know, it'll hopefully be an appropriate presentation, and I think we've got all the right people involved on that committee.
Starting point,
You know, on a historical note, it might be, and most people don't realize, but the road, Long Valley Road that goes down into Lostown Creek and the Long Valley Creek, and that was actually a toll road at one time, and I thought, you know, maybe if you open that up, then the Highlands people could get some income coming from that as a toll road, you know?
I've been there once before with Bob.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe. We're in our planning department, Jason Van Habel.
Nothing to say, thank you.
Very good. We're Public Works, Director Nevin.
Short is sweet, Mike. Short is sweet.
They told me to put
short
the
is sweet.
Did you hear him? How long did you go on this morning? I missed it.
Now, you didn't time the other Nevin that was up here.
Well, I was not going to tell him about your reputation.
I was
going to check.
I was wondering why you moved to this corner.
Yeah, that's right. I came to watch you.
I won't tell you what the comptroller suggested, but
the other Nevin or the other two Nevin?
Well, just one so far.
Well, and he was within 3 minutes. Oh, that's right. We've got to. Okay, sure.
We're all over the place here
can
today.
Can anybody control this man? Can they?
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning. It is still morning. Just a few things to provide you with some updates. The Marlette system began pumping water from the lake on July 8th. They had some problems initially with the pump this year and had to pull it and replace seals, but a few days later they got it up and running. Of course, the beneficiary to most of that water is the city of Carson. You know, we're flowing from the system about 250 gallons a minute on average, you know, 24/7 during the summer. It peaks a little bit and goes up to 3.25, but rarely over about 325 gallons a minute. One of the things about also pumping Marlette is it has an opportunity to flush out the Hobart Reservoir and get rid of some of that pine pollen and the buildup of some of the organic materials that are present in water until, you know, it moves it through. So they're still spilling at diversion about 3 inches over the dam. And the spill at Hobart is nice this year. It's running about 3 inches as well. So supply is good. Hopefully it stays that way through the rest of the season. As part of the Marlette system, and you folks recall that we entered into that memorandum of understanding with NDOT, the Marlette system for the replacement of that piece of the siphon that runs underneath 580 as part of that 580 rehabilitation project. We had thought that that would have been completed by now, but when you're dealing with so many state, federal, local entities, things kind of get bogged down at times. And so that project has not been complete. Although all the permits are now in place, the change order was issued by the Department of Transportation to Q&D, who is the contractor for that project. The boring and the sleeving was supposed to have started this morning, and I think they were still on target to do that. So that bore will go through and underneath the highway from the west side to the east side. The sleeve will be put in place. They're still awaiting delivery of some of the specialized piping, fittings, and materials that are all custom built for the project. And initially there was some problem with the survey. This survey has to be right on target because of this custom-made apparatus that has to tie the new into the old. They can't be off and make adjustments, you know, in a foot or two. They've got to be within, you know, fractions of inches. So it's pretty important that, you know, it's done correctly. And we will have project inspected as it's moving along, and the state is in a contract with the engineering firm, which is Geocon out of Reno, so they'll do all that stuff as part of that project. So it's our hope, after a pre-construction meeting last week, that the project should be finalized, the tie-in made, and water flowing through that new piece of the siphon probably mid-October at best, so, you know, which is actually a good time of year because, you know, things are starting to slow down for us over on this side, so, you know, we're not taking as much water, so we can afford the shutdown for a week or whatever it's going to take. Secondly, we're beginning this park project here at Miners Park in Virginia City. Of course, the playground equipment has been ordered. We expect arrival sometime this month, and then we'll get on getting that stuff erected. I have sent out a request for quotes for the paver portion for the beautification around the playground equipment and the existing restrooms. Those are due back to us by the end of this week, so once we get that, we can take a look, see who the contractor we may choose to do that portion of the project for us. If you've noticed the grass in the ball field section of the park down there, and I call it all a park, But it looks like it's gone dormant. They were having issues figuring out what was going on. It looks like it's dying out. So they took some samples, took them into the University of Nevada Cooperative Extension, and come to find out there's a substantial virus in the grass in the ball field section. So they've been in contact with their supplier of their liquid fertilizer system in Las Vegas. He did get a product sent up here, I believe it was yesterday, and they did go down and do the first application spray to eradicate the virus. And they're pretty certain that it will come back 100%. But if you notice it and we're wondering what's going on down there, that's the issue. So they're working heartily. The school district, of course, maintains that portion of it through a lease that we have with them. So with any luck, it'll start to green back up here soon. So I just wanted to make you aware of what the issue was down there. The last couple of weeks, we've been down in the Mark Twain Estates doing quite a bit of shoulder work, some roadside drainage type work down there, working with some of the existing homeowners on culvert problems and concerns that they had. So it's been working out pretty well. We got a lot of nice comments back, too, both verbally and written to us and our crew. So that was nice to hear from the folks down there. The Cape Seal, Slurry Seal project is out to bid. The bid documents were sent out a couple weeks ago. The bid opening is next Monday at Far West Engineering. This year, the project includes the first priority of the road improvement project for the industrial park, and that was the section of Denmark from USA Parkway up to and including the portion of Venice that runs over to PetSmart. Lockwood will see Canyon Way sealed from the Truckee River Bridge to the cattle guard just up past the residential area there south of the fire station. The Highlands will see the 2 mile section of Cartwright completed from where we left off last year down to and including the paved section that ends just east of the fire station. Mark Twain Estates will see Sutro Springs completed from the county line up to Wagon Wheel. All of Wagon Wheel over to Lafond, and then all of Lafond is the Story County side down there. So, and then all of 6 Mile Canyon from R Street to the county line where it meets up with Lyon on the east end down there. So some pretty substantial, you know, mile. It's probably about 10, 11 miles worth of slurry seal this year. So we'll have, like I say, the bid opening is Monday, so we should have that on your agenda for the next meeting on the 16th for approval and award of the contract. So stay tuned. Did a little widening project down here on L Street. Had a situation down there where we had kind of a bottleneck, if you will, where we had, you know, the road kind of narrowed pretty significantly in front of a couple of pieces of property there, and it opened it up considerably, and it looks pretty good, so, and it pleased the homeowners there too. So next week we have a meeting on the anticipated sewer replacement project with the archaeological folks. They're complete with their work, so we'll go over anything, you know, that we need to know and any concerns that they may have before the project gets off and running sometime spring of 17. So we did hire a replacement mechanic position. The individual started yesterday. A younger gal or guy, Nathan White is his name. He brings with him quite a bit of experience, and I want to thank the fire department for helping out on the interview process this year. I think it went well. So, anyway, he's on board, and we'll put him to work here directly. He spent most of the day yesterday going through the process of being able to come to work in Story County. So, looking forward to getting to know Nathan and see how he works out, and I think he's going to be fine. So, the other thing I just wanted to make mention is the Six Mile Canyon FEMA drainage project that's been ongoing for
decades,
as long as I've been here in this position. Now they're indicating that they're not quite certain that Story County is responsible or has been for the maintenance, and I can tell you that as long as I've been here in the Comstock, which is 60-some years, they've always maintained it. So we'll send some correspondence to those folks indicating as such, and hopefully they'll be satisfied with that document. Dean had mentioned that there may be some old documentation between NDOT and the county that he was going to take a look-see to see if was still available that we can include. So just those slow processes, but you know, one bit at a time, and we'll get there eventually. That's pretty much all I have for you today.
Any questions?
I didn't even use any time.
Oh my word.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
What's the document you're looking for then?
We'll talk offline.
Okay.
All right, over at the no, they don't have any questions. Mike, thank you. All right, we're Director of Security, Melanie Keener.
Thank you.
All right. We're Community Development, Mr. Haymore.
Transfer from state to county on maintenance of the project that you have.
Ownership of the whole world. Keep it short, I got cruising to do.
Thank you, Commissioners. I just want to bring to your attention that the Nevada State Contractors Board issued a consumer alert yesterday or over the weekend that there is an unlicensed contractor going around our area called Reliable Roofing and Paving that is scamming homeowners, seniors, and small businesses and taking their money up front for materials and then leaving town. So I wanted to bring that to your attention and to let everybody know that if they have hired somebody to do something, they need to check to see if they have a Story County business license. Our business license requires if they're making money in Story County that they apply for a Story County business license. That doesn't mean it has to be a licensed contractor, but our office goes through and checks, make sure they have a state business license, make sure if they are a contractor, they have the proper contractor's license and everything else. So all the residents in Story County should always check and ask if they have a Story County business license. If not, refer them to us, and then we will check them out so we can stop any kind of scams and things like that that are happening. Also, I just want to thank all those that attended the Aqua Metals and the Tesla grand opening. And just a little bit, I was talking to a lady that's a retired school teacher at the Aqua Metals, and her husband was the insurance person providing the insurance for Aqua Metals and all the bonding and everything. And she asked how Story County got her name. And I told him about Captain Story and the Indian War and everything else, the Three-Day War. And she was very appreciative that we knew that the history of Story County, that was kind of weird that a county was called Story. And I told him about Captain Story and everything else. So to follow in with Joe's and everything else to understand, you know, Captain Story sitting there looking at us and things like that, and how we got our name for Story County. Met with a couple more companies trying to get some businesses down there across from Lance with some more food. Had some escrows closed on Vince's property, so there are going to be some things moving along there. Met with a couple more companies this last week. So with that, any other questions? Thank you.
Any questions for Dean?
Thank you, Dean.
Great. Thank you, Dean.
Pretty good.
That was really pretty good. Good.
All right. Moving along now over to community relations. Sherry Nevin. Very good.
That's the second Nevin that talked faster than you did, Michael.
That's because Sherry let her dad have her time.
Is everybody going to chime in now on everything?
No.
Excuse me.
Sorry. It's staff report.
Okay. Back to planning and human resources. Mr. Osborne.
Thank you, Chairman, Mr. Commissioners. I just have a couple items. I'll be brief. One is a reminder once again. I know you've heard me say it 9,000 times, but 9,001 is better. We are having a master plan workshop on August 4th. That is the day that the master plan is being slated for adoption. I understand that there will be a substantial amount of meeting going on August 4th, but that's the day. So that will happen here at the courthouse. It'll be at 6 o'clock in the evening. And if that meeting goes as planned, then that master plan will be heard by this board on August 16th. And at that point, I remind the public that there is still time for questions and comments and submittals between those two periods of time. Past the master plan, when this is done, a little bit of a couple of goals and objectives for our team in planning is really to tackle the sign ordinance and doing business on the boardwalk ordinance and really tuning that up to meet some of the needs in Virginia City. Most of the rest of the county is fine, but some of them may be to loosen up some of the regulations and to clarify other regulations and make things appropriate. The most important part about that is we'll be working through the VCTC and the business community with those workshops to make sure that ultimately what we end up with is what the people here in town and our businesses are able to deal with, and then ultimately what the Planning Commission and this board will determine is appropriate. We're also looking at design standards in the zoning ordinance, and these will be things particularly for multifamily residential uses and certain industrial uses that will be allowed to be next to residential uses in the master plan will be standards with building design, placement, parking lots, egress, landscaping, things like that. That will also go through the whole public process and through the Planning Commission and this board. Jason and I, particularly Jason, working on reorganizing floodplain management in the county is more of a team approach. Jason's been taking quite a lead on that and working with Dean's office. The next thing we're looking at is we know that there's an interest for tattoos or tattooing type of establishments. At this point, I don't have an opinion on whether we should go left, right, or front or back, but we'll go through a series of workshops, again, involving the VCTC and the business community, as well as the Planning Commission, in developing ordinances for those types of uses, whether we want them or not, and where we want them and where we don't. The next thing is a big one that Jason and I are both working on with the Carson Water Subconservancy and the Mark Twain community is the Mark Twain Comprehensive Flood Plan. It's building on the Far West study from 2011 and going through and coming up with more specific mitigation for flooding that occurs in that area, and two-prong, one being regional flooding coming from the Virginia Range or the Flowery Range down there, and the other is the localized flooding such as street culverts, shoulders, and things like that. And what's kind of exciting about that is the Carson Water Subconservancy District is allowing us to be involved in some of the funding mechanisms they have with FEMA, and there will be some things that you'll see from me on this board as far as getting us connected to those, such as joining some of their components. And then last but not least on the HR side, Hometown Health as well as LP Insurance, LP being our insurance broker, they are sometime in September. We're establishing a date. Jesse's been working heavily on that. Is they're going to come up and set shop up here for a day or two and allow employees to come to them and just share some of the experiences they had and address questions they have regarding their health benefits and prescriptions and things like that. Little hiccups they may have had between the time we changed over to Hometown and now. So it's kind of a mid-year catch-up, and our employees will have a chance, as well as anybody else on our plan, to meet with those folks. Thank you.
Any questions for Austin? No? Great. Thank you, Austin. Okay. Next up, District Attorney Langer.
No, I spent my time heckling Mike Nevin today. I have nothing to add, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Counselor. County Manager Whitten.
She may have spent her time doing that, but not mine. I have a real quick five things to go through, and I promise to go as rapidly as possible. Last meeting, I mentioned potential usage of Story County's singular bill draft request for the 2017 legislative session. I hope to have on the agenda, I need to have on the agenda for August 16th, your approval of the essence of that bill draft request while I still work out wording with both the district attorney's office and also Mary Walker. But to just kind of give everybody a heads up so that if there is any additional interest in this, it would be focused on totally revamping the composition of the Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the B&T Railway. And I'm going to defer to board comments here in a little bit about a meeting that we had yesterday, and I may tag team on with that. But that kind of anticipate that to happen on August 16th, because that's our last shot at this as far as using our BDR request.
Okay.
Number two, again, Denny had to take off for other events, but we had a rather small classic car show this weekend, 327 registered vehicles in Virginia City for Hot August Nights. I think everybody did a great job. The HON organization is incredible, but it takes an awful lot of work by our tourism folks, and our tourism ranks are right now very, very thin, giving turnover. So I think it almost went off without a flaw. There are a few people that are probably never happy, but for the most part, I think there were a lot of smiling faces by everybody. Third off, there has been some reference to the presentation made earlier in staff by Battalion Chief Nevin by his father. I want to make mention that today was his coming out party, if you will. During the period of time of August 11th through August 26th, Chief Hames will be pursuing the opportunity of a lifetime, in my opinion, that I am so envious. I wish I didn't weigh as much as I did and I could sneak into his luggage, but he's going to Cooperstown with his son's baseball team. So great opportunity, and B.C. Nevins will be in charge of the show for those 2 weeks. Gary, have a great time. Second to last on my list, I want to recognize a gentleman that's here today, because this just may be his last meeting. I'm not 100% sure. He may be around for one more. And Ron, I want to tell you the reason why Austin didn't say anything was I told him I wanted to, you know, to do this. So Ron has said, okay, you can talk, but make it short and try to make it sweet. So long story short, Ron is leaving toward the end of this month to pursue his and his wife's passions, and apparently that path takes them to South Dakota. I will tell you, Ron has been my go-to guy for a long time for all things Mark Twain, whether it be the community center, whether it be his position on the Planning Commission. I have to tell you, there will be a huge loss when you leave this county, and you leave the county with a whole lot of fondness by those of us on staff who have treasured and prospered because of our working relationship with you. I will kind of leave it at that in honor of what Ron has asked me to do, but thank you and tell you, at least as far as the Planning Commission is concerned, you can't leave until you give both Jim and Austin and the rest of your team a equally, if not better, replacement. So there you go. And last, I have some bad news, good news, and a warning for all of us. I had the opportunity to chat a little bit with Nicole before this morning's meeting, and it's fairly common knowledge out there that a beloved Highlands resident, Lacey J. Dalton, her dog got bitten not once but twice by a rattlesnake, so that's the bad news. The good news is the dog survived the night. Nicole shared a picture. Its head is probably swollen bigger than a pumpkin.
And it's it really shouldn't be that way, I'm pretty sure. But so he survived, and then while we were chatting, a gentleman right in front of us indicated he was part of the Highlands Well Group, I guess, that his daughter works for the vet that worked on the dog, and the dog is the dog survived the night, and the dog is doing as okay as it can be after getting bit twice by a rattlesnake. Mm. So the warning to all of us is, snakes are everywhere. My own dog got popped about 3 years ago, and thank God it was the big dog and not the little dog. But it's scary. There are snake aversion courses out there. I think the Highlands just had one within the last week or two, thanks to the Postons. And there are, although they will be clear to tell you, that it's not necessarily the strain or breed of rattlesnake up here. It's further south for some reason, but there are vaccines that you can give your pets ahead of time. You give them two the first year and then a booster every year after that. You might want to consider that through your vet. It was pretty cost effective for me to do, better than a big vet bill to do that. That warning, of course, applies not only to our pets, but our children and ourselves and everybody on them. That's it.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Any questions for Pat? Good. Nothing from the clerk's office today? Okay. That concludes the committee and staff reports. Moving along now to item number 8. These are board comments, and we'll take no action or public comment on that. And we'll start at the far end of the table here. It's Commissioner McGuffey.
Yeah, it's been kind of a whirlwind for us here in the last few weeks. We had a bunch of things to take care of before we left town for the NACO convention in Long Beach. I wasn't really looking forward to going to Long Beach. Last time I was down there was 1990 for the 44 Reno to Anaheim cruise, and it was like pretty blasé, but the only thing there was the Queen Mary and the Spruce Goose, but the rest of it is pretty much shipping containers and stuff like that. It was highly industrial. Well, in the last 5 years, they have gone in there and rebuilt that whole harbor. That's what the locals are telling me. This all happened within the last 5 years, and the place looks pretty awesome, and it was actually kind of enjoyable, all the shops and the restaurants along the harbor. It was a really nice atmosphere. NACO itself, the convention was awesome. Several high-quality workshops. I focus mostly on ethics and government spending courses, along with I joined in on several steering committees. You know, that to give you a little more insight on the NACO, they have 10 policy-making steering committees, and you can jump on those anytime you want to. And they cover agricultural and rural affairs, community economic and workforce development, environment, energy, land use, finance, pensions, governmental affairs, human resources, services and education, justice and public safety, public lands, telecommunications and technology, along with transportation. So there's quite a wide variety of these steering committees, and they all congregate at this national convention to do their final voting and endorsements for legislative actions. So it's pretty interesting there. However, I'm glad to be able to be sleeping in my own bed again. As Pat had mentioned, we had a very good meeting with the BNT. We met with a couple of the BNT people, board members, primarily Dwight Millard, the chair, and then Candace. I can't remember Candace. Candace Duncan. She runs the marketing stuff. I've been writing them about the poor numbers coming from each train. The last number was 40% ridership, and we've only had a couple trains that really broke the record and actually showed to make some money. So I've kind of been riding their tails pretty hard lately. And then we finally sat down and had a good talk. We've got Pat's working on a new BDR. We're looking at cleaning up our MOU with Carson. We're looking at cleaning up the board. I mean, everybody on the board, it seems like, has a hand in the till on this train. And so it all came out, it all exploded, and now we're all focused on cleaning this all up, and it's looking really good. On another note...
Excuse me, Commissioner McGuffey, before you go into your next topic, I think Pat wanted to weigh in on the
VNT. I would love to have you weigh in, Pat.
Thank you, and you covered everything so well. I want to first off say Commissioner McGuffey is being very modest when he says he's kind of been riding these people. He is probably the biggest instigator and stirrer of a pot that I know out there in a very good way, because he's talking about holding them accountable, running this operation like a business, all the key elements that, you know, he's insisting are there as a member of their commission and also our representative. So he's certainly riding them, and I think he deserves probably a place in the Way It Was Rodeo coming up in September to prove that you can do the same thing with bulls and bronking bucks. But the only other item is to kind of expand a little bit on where the intent seems to be going now with the potential BDR focus. After meeting with Dwight and Candace, and Jack, of course, we were hoping to get a commission pared down. There's currently 9 members on that commission. We were hoping to get that pared down to 3. That's pretty radical. But that would be a representative, an elected representative from Story County. Representative from Story County, an elected representative from Carson City, and then potentially one governor tiebreaker appointee. And that current appointee is Dwight Millard as the governor's appointee. We looked at that, and Dwight gave some very good, solid reasons why we might want to consider 5. The bottom line is if you look at Lyon County, Douglas County, and Washoe County, they have no skin in the game. So why have them on the board? And then there are some really odd appointments. The Speaker of the Assembly gets an appointment. The Senate Majority Leader gets an appointment. And you've got at least one guy that's on there because he represented some historic rail society or something like that. Those are the ones I think Commissioner McGuffey more kindly references than me, as everybody seems to have their opinions and, you know, agendas. We want to strip that away, but I think we want to look at 5 now. And I like that concept. This was suggested by Dwight as a kind of morph through lunch yesterday. So it would be those 3 that I mentioned, the governor appointee, hopefully Dwight, because he's very impassioned and very committed to what he does, a Story rep, a Carson rep. But we'd also like to involve the heads of the 2 tourism groups as well, the VCTC, and also the Carson City Convention and Visitors Bureau, Joel Dunn. So that will most likely be our focus. I mean, if you really look at what is the VNT long line for, it's for tourism. And there are many co-marketing, co-branding efforts that we can do that Candace kind of threw out there that I think are very exciting. Things like, you know, maybe we could have this weekend if we would have had our collective acts together, not blaming anybody, perhaps had a special train come up from Carson City or the Saturday annual that promotes old car buffs, you know, where they could see the old cars in town. I don't think we had a Friday train, but we could have conceivably created one just for that purpose, too. But there's a lot of great marketing opportunities, and I'm looking forward. I hope the BDR succeeds. There's no guarantees, but to me it makes all the sense in the world.
Right. Yes, and we agree that it's crucial to get the VCTC and the Carson Tourism Board together on this, because that's where it's got to happen. It's a tourism train. We've got to keep both people on the same ship here to make it happen. so far they've kind of gone their own ways and just left it up to the commission. And so it's not working because 9 people can't make a decision on this team. So that's why we want to have a smaller, more focused group down the road. I think we're on the right path.
Right track.
Yeah, on the right track. Yeah, the right track there. A little pun there, huh? Okay. Just a little note to thank our local Comstock area number 523, the Eagles, for donating $200 towards the St. Mary's Mattress Drive. The Mattress Drive is doing very well, and I have to thank constituents here, thank you out there for what you've contributed as well. Thank you. I guess on the last note, we had a couple of grand openings. I won't elaborate too much. Maybe Marshall has something to say. But the Aqua Metals grand opening was pretty interesting. Even though they hadn't made their first ingot, it's pretty interesting how they're going about it. They showed us all the equipment, gave us that tour, and showed us the molds of stuff. It's the kind of a micro nanofiber lead that comes out of the process of the recycling of batteries. And now there's drawn more interest in this nanotechnology of how they're making this lead for future electronics, maybe. So, but they're recycling batteries without smelting. And basically they end up with this nanofiber of lead that they can just compress into a mold. And each ingot will be about 60 pounds or something like that, and this is in that range. Anyway, it's pretty interesting to see the process. And then, of course, we had Tesla's grand opening. I think that it was guesstimated around 2,000 people showed up for that. Elon Musk, he got up there and spoke. A lot of people wondered what it was like. Actually, I took him as he's not a very good speaker. He's kind of like me. I'm not a very good speaker, but he gets up there and just kind of tells you what like it is, and he's actually kind of entertaining at the same time. So it was a good grand opening. It's good to see him going. They're in production on a battery pack, a power pack, that they plan on moving forward to the other batteries. There was even talk about the automotive components, and even mentioning maybe the automotive facility may come this way. That's kind of way down the road. Just like they also was asked about bringing the Roadster back, and that's kind of on their wish list. That'd be icing on the cake, but that's way out there. So that's all I have to say.
Great. Thanks, Jack. Commissioner Gilman?
That's a good day. Thank you.
All right. On Commissioner Gilman's shirt tails there, I attended National NACO with he and County Manager Whitman in Long Beach as well. Attended several workshops there. And also the grand openings. It's been a busy couple of weeks
here. Yes,
it's been crazy. This lead battery recycling plant down there, Aqua Metals, this is the newest technology out there, and they're the only ones that have it. They're going to start out with recycling at least 1 million car batteries a year, and that's just a start. Every part of that battery is recyclable. The acid is, the plastic, the lead. And, of course, you'll learn from these events that lead is the largest recycled metal in the world, which you'd think maybe aluminum was from all the beer cans, but it's great. Hat goes off to Hot August Nights and their volunteers. They have the best volunteer system of any organization I think I've ever seen. They did a tremendous job of setting everything up, running the event, tearing it down. Just hours after the event, you don't even know that they were here. Everything's all picked up, cleaned up. They're very courteous people. They love what they do. They love old cars, rock and roll, and cold beer. So anyway, it was a great event. BC Tourism worked with them hand in hand, and I think it went off without a hitch. Just a lot of people in town, and a lot of beautiful cars, millions and millions of dollars worth of these classic cars. It was a great event, and business wise, I think the merchants did very well in town. So Moving along now to item number 9.
And if I may just add one aside to the Hot August Nights group. For those that missed it and really want to see it, come back on Thursday. Because then you'll see many of the cars you saw over the weekend, but you'll all see many, many more. I don't know their number count yet for the poker run. But part of our support and sponsorship of Han includes not only this past weekend, but also being a poker run stop on Thursday. And it's a very popular time, particularly probably more so for those that didn't come up here over the weekend. Maybe they didn't get here yet. A lot of them come in Tuesday, Wednesday, or the peak days. But there'll be a lot of cool metal out there again on Thursday.
Thanks for that. Yeah, that got by me. Poker run. Great. All right, moving on now to item number 9, discussion only. We'll take no action. This is an update from the staff regarding the ongoing zip code issues.
I guess that would be me. I'm glad we do this quarterly, and I kind of wish we could maybe do it annually because it seems to
I
be...
I wish we didn't have to do it at all anymore.
Well, that's true. It seems to be a very slow process, but some things are happening. Kind of on the bad news side. Now, on the good news side, we've had good productive meetings with the Nevada Department of Taxation on the pitfalls and issues involving using the zip code as a locator, a situs locator for point of sale, point of delivery on particularly materials out of the industrial park. That's the big one. So we've got taxation's as on board as their systems allow them to be. They also have signed, the Board of Taxation or the Tax Commission has signed their interlocal or their our memorandum of understanding with the state that allows a small team to go in and actually under cloaks of confidentiality take a look at the individual sales and use tax returns for some of these suppliers that are out there. So that's a good news side. The bad news side, really, as far as zip codes, is the Postal Service is, bar none, the most difficult federal agency I've ever worked with. I asked for a simple question to be answered by the Las Vegas Regional Routing Manager and came back and said, you're not going to get your own zip code. Because you made a verbal application in essence last year, and that means you're not going to get it. We've already told you no. We've never made a verbal app. We've never made a written app. I don't even know if they have a provision for a verbal app. We've been very careful in our discussions to say we want to approach this in a basically a pre-established path that our answer should be yes, whether we have to go through the congressional delegations or what. But they are unbelievably obstinate, I guess. The good news side of it is through our federal lobbyist, John Porter, and his staff, there is a potential, I believe it's Congressman Chafee,
yeah.
From Utah, is drafting a potential piece of legislation that would that specifically has a provision in there for Story County to have its own unique zip code. And we're one of only three jurisdictions mentioned in the entire draft. There apparently are two others that are pushing for whatever their reasons are that we intend to find out. But that's good news. There are some potential concerns that I voiced at our last teleconference meeting. And they're looking at the language, verifying it with Chafee's staff and bill writers. I think the realistic bet forecast is it may not even make it to the floor this year. It's got a potential to make it by something they call unanimous consent or some process. But so we don't really expect passage this session. We certainly hope to get passage next session. This had, at least as far as the Nevada delegation, bi-party support. Senator Reed's been very active in it. Senator Heller as well. And Congressman Amity has been there swinging at the fences every time. Interestingly enough, and this happened just yesterday, now the media is beginning to pick up on our quest too. And I spent the better part of an hour yesterday talking with a publication called Route 50. Don't know too much about them. Know they're based in Washington, D.C. And he asked me for like a 5-minute overview of our zip code issue and taxation. And we hung up an hour later, and I said, call me back when you want part two. So I think that's my update. I'd be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Yeah, that was a young lady that I ran into at the NACO convention, I believe. I think it was a NACO convention, yeah. And I don't even know how we got on the tax thing, the zip code thing, but she just lit up with interest. It's like, oh, this sounds like a great story. And so I forwarded her to you. That's where it was.
Now I connect those dots.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
That was good.
Any questions, Pat?
No questions.
No. Okay. Moving along now to item number 10, discussion only, no possible action. Human Resources Department will provide a general statistical update of personnel actions, terminations, and turnover occurring since July the 1st, 2015, for each department and office of Story County. Austin?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you. So I was asked at the last meeting to provide, by this commission, to provide a little bit of a summary of some statistics pertaining to human resources actions in Story County, including all of our regular employees, as well as our elected offices and the Story County Fire District. And I'll explain how all these intertwine with each other throughout this presentation. So first I was going to start off with just providing you some very raw numbers of things that have happened in the different departments, and then some other statistical elements of our overall organization. So I'm going to talk about each department, and I'm going to talk about terminations, grievances, arbitrations, litigations, NERC, EEOC, that's employment, equal opportunity employment, either at the federal or the state level, or other actions. I'm not going to talk about people, names, specifics to what is happening, or any other potential way that somebody could connect a person or something that's going on in a department. It's going to be just statistical. So for the clerk treasurer's office, zero. For the recorder's office, zero of all of those things I just listed. Justice of the peace, zero. The assessor's office, zero. The district attorney's office, zero. The sheriff's office for terminations, there were, by the way, this is the period of time from July 1, 2015 to July 1, 2016. For the sheriff's office, there were 5 terminations, and there were also 2 transfers out of the office into other departments. Grievances, zero. Arbitration, zero. Litigation, 1, and 1 pending. NERC, EEOC, 2, and other actions, 1. Public Works, 0. Community Development, 2 terminations. Emergency Management, 0. Community Services, 0. Planning, 0. Comptroller, 0. VCTC, 0. Communications, 3 terminations. Some of those terminations, including in the Sheriff's Office, the Community Development, and the Communications Office, may or may not have been probationary employees that did not meet their probationary period, but nevertheless, they were terminations. For the Fire District, I'm going to bring a Fire District separate because I'm going to probably lean a little bit on the DA on how we deal with, do we deal with Fire District as the Fire Board, or can we put it all together as statistical together now because they're really the county.
We're not taking any action on this, right?
No, there's no action. And if you're fine and with just us covering all of this under this board and not the Fire Board, then I'll just go ahead and cover Fire District, because when I talk about the other FTE and the other statistics, it really covers us as a full organization.
It's just information.
Okay. We've got it listed on the agenda.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we should follow the agenda. agenda.
Okay.
It's called figure it out.
Okay, that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, let's go ahead and we'll handle it separately since we've already had it agendized.
In the future, though, are we all comfortable with just these are the county stats? It doesn't matter if it's the fire district or the rest of the county.
Since we're not taking any action, I don't see why we can't combine everything in the future.
Then we'll follow that path because these are going to be roughly, I don't know how often we're going to do this part, but we've got quarterlies to do and everything else. So.
Okay. Then I'll hold fire district to the next item, but it's going to be hard to refrain from them on the rest of it, but I think we'll be fine. So those are just the raw things that are going on in the county. I can't talk about details of what they are.
Okay, can you just reiterate on the offices that did have terminations?
To repeat those?
Yeah, don't repeat the ones that have nothing.
So the communications department has 3 terminations, and then the community development department has 2 terminations, and the sheriff's office has 5 terminations plus 2 transfers, and then they have 1 litigation with 1 litigation pending. And they have 2 NERC or EEOC claims and 1 other action. Another action, this is another kind of a miscellaneous thing that I'm dealing with that can't talk about any detail. Those are all of them.
Okay. That's in a 12-year period?
This is in a 12-month period.
12-month period.
And then the other things I have now are globalized across our entire organization, just some HR statistics. Our full-time equivalency, what this means is you take all of your full-time employees and your part-time employees and you just calculate them all together to how many actual employees working on full-time equivalent do you have. For Story County exclusive, there's 95. If you were to include the fire district of 41, that would create 136 total FTE for Story County organization one way or another. And then that's going to lead in some of these other notes that I'm going to bring up. So the turnover without transfers in our county, and what turnover is, if you were to go to the Department of Labor Statistics, any employee that was, they're hired, they're fired, they quit, they leave, whatever in the organization, it does not include layoffs. So the turnover for Story County without transfers is about 10.5%. That includes everybody, the whole 136 total, which is actually 15% or less is considered acceptable in any general organization. Total turnover with transfers, those are the 2 that I talked about, would be 12.6. And then the turnover for the fire district I'll talk about in the next agenda item. But for both, when you put it all together, and again, it's hard to differentiate. We should just put these together, but I don't know how you do that with a fire board or whatever. But we really run about the whole organization 11% turnover. And then with all of the transfers included, about 12.5%. We could be better. If you look at manufacturing across the United States, the turnover generally is about 8%. And this is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's also as recommended by the Society of Human Resources Management, SHRM. Hospitality runs about 35%, but it can be as high as 58%. And the United States average is about 15%. Government in general, federal, local, usually runs about 1.8%. It's substantially lower generally. Turnover cost, it's to come up with a general cost. So ours may be less and maybe more, but if you were to take our average employee wage, it's from the very top to the very bottom, every employee included is about $22.05 an hour. So you take the amount, what the turnover cost is, taking that dollar and then looking at all of your internal costs when you lose an employee, whether they quit, whether you terminate them or whatever, all of the things it takes to train that employee and then terminate that employee, do all your unemployment, all the things that follow the employment, the staff time it takes to do that, in addition to the overtime that's accrued with employees that are working in that office that now have to fill that gap, as well as the department head then that has to go and do training and take time away from other functions of the office, and then the time it takes the human resources staff to onboard employees and to do job postings, the entire gamut together, every single impact that happens when an employee leaves at that dollar, $22 an hour, comes out to about $13,315 loss per employee that left, and it comes out to Story County spent about $133,150 in dealing with this turnover issue. The number may be higher, may be lower, because you look at the 2205 as the average. In reality, you're probably going to have a number that's lower for the employee to the left and a number that's higher for the management that's dealing with the covering overtime, whatever. But that's a number at least you can keep consistency through the model. What we do to mitigate and try to keep turnover down, one is creating a happy organization. That really is the truth, trying to create a place that people want to work and stay and be attracted to. But when we do have issues with employees, and it happens, and sometimes the employee is going through a rough time, sometimes the employee is burnt out, sometimes the employee is off the tracks for whatever is going on in his personal life or professional life, we will typically send an employee to an employee assistance program, which is an EAP. Our insurance pays for this, for an employee to actually go see everything from someone to help them counsel in job performance to addressing personal problems, everything that you can imagine from alcohol and substance abuse all the way to landlord disputes and disputes with banks and financial issues or even psychological types of things if you want to go that far. They provide that service at no cost for the employee, and we send them there and they help them. And it has been a tremendously successful program. They have a great team over there, and I've had employees come to me at odd hours and odd times saying, something just happened in my life. This is my story. Can you please help me? I get in contact with EAP, and I wish I could share some of the stories that we're now going years later, that their lives have improved substantially and they're great employees because of it. Employee training, everything from your raw harassment trainings and things like that, but also the professional development training. We try to do that to get an employee up and running and back on the rails. Department head training comes along with that, whether it's an elected official or whether it's a department head, to provide them the tools necessary to be, you know, better management skills, addressing certain employee issues, whatever it is, you name it. And then a lot of times we'll put an employee and or an employer on a personal improvement plan or a professional improvement plan, and that comes with goals and objectives that we build together, and then we monitor that process throughout the year to try to get them back where they need to be. We don't want to terminate employees. That is not the goal of the organization. It's expensive. It creates issues throughout the organization, and it's not good for anybody. And really the goal of all of this is to make what's happening stop. Very simply, to improve employee performance, to reduce attrition, and to reduce turnover costs.
Back it up a little bit, and how many county employees did we have versus fire department employees?
We have 95 Story County employees that are not fire district.
And then how many fire department?
41.
41. Great.
Yeah, may I add just one comment?
Sure.
And again, this is probably more appropriate when we're working as a district, but it's, to me, it's the county, because it's the county taxpayers, it's the county everything. But, you know, there, in addition to Austin's rock solid numbers, there are other major numbers out there that we want to make sure that, you know, at least you guys are aware of in the process, because we're aware. I would let the sheriff speak to deputies and how much of an investment, a disposable investment, if you will, that we might make on either ballistic vests or things that, you know, just don't move around to other people. But in the fire department, for instance, the PPE, the personal protection equipment, the PPE, that runs about $3,000, you know, per firefighter. So when we lose one, you know, it hits the pocket even probably deeper than...
It can be in excess of $10,000 per, if I'm right, fire district. When you look at training someone for paramedic and all of those things that go along with it, as well as sheriff's office and some of our others, but those in particular with emergency management can be very substantial costs.
How large is the staff at communications?
Seven, maybe eight.
Yeah, it's seven or eight. It is.
Seven or eight? We've got three turnovers.
We also have some part-timers.
Okay. Would a part-timer being terminated be in these numbers?
A part-timer would be, these are, they do include part-timers.
Okay.
And now that I think about it just for a moment, when I think back on that for the terminations, they don't. They are the full-timers. There could be a part-timer in communications, but the rest are full-timers. And again, sometimes they don't need probationary period. You get an employee, and it could be the employer, it could be the employee, it could be both. But they're just raw, straight numbers.
If he doesn't make it through his probationary period, is that known as a termination?
Yes.
Classified termination.
That's classified termination.
And I would make a note here without talking specifics on anybody, which fortunately I don't know the specifics, so it doesn't matter if we're talking sheriff's probationary, communications probationary, or really anybody else. Our bargaining agreements call for, I believe, is it 9 months or 12 months?
It is. Well, in the fire and the sheriff, it's a 12-month probationary period. In the AFSCME contract, it's a 9-month with a 3-year extension if needed.
3 months.
Did I say 3 years?
Yeah.
3 months.
But, you know, we really, all the electives and the department heads out there look at that, even though it's painful to make those decisions. You know, if that 9-month or 12-month period of time has just been marked with warning signals that this is going to be a very rocky relationship, it gets a lot worse after their probation's up because they're given a lot of contractual rights under the collective bargaining agreements that we have. And so it's, you know, we're not just willy-nilly about cutting somebody loose because they're coming up on the 8th month and 30th day or whatever it is, but we do take a look at that because it gets much more challenging to hopefully correct and even address, you know, corrective action when it's needed.
And I think what also needs to be added to this, and I'll be careful, I don't talk about collective bargaining, but there's a lot of moving parts in this. So whether you look at one person or another, you look at, do we pay compared to the region? Do we provide benefits compared to the region? Do we provide quality of life compared to the region? Some people will leave our organization and go to other places because it's better. We have people leaving other places to come here because it's better. But one way or another, all those things need to be included, as well as some of them. There's no fault on either party that someone leaves. The person left because of family issues or because they moved to another state or because of whatever happened. So you're not necessarily getting the picture of everything that's happened here, but you did get a little bit of a snapshot of at least where we are statistically as an organization and potentially areas we might be able to look at improvement.
Austin, you mentioned that there's like the self-help stuff out there.
Correct.
For not only the people who are terminated or left, but also for elected officials, managers. Do you see much participation from the managers? Or
the national average of using an EAP is about 2%, and we're right around there. We try very hard to promote this program and get people to understand it exists, and it is the usage is usually promoted, and then someone uses it, and then it's promoted again, and another person uses it, or it's another form, which is called a management referral. As an employee, you're going to be required to use it, and then I'm going to monitor that you used it, when you used it, how much you used it, and whether you complied with whatever we put together to make you better. That's kind of the picture there.
Mr. Gilman, do you have any questions for us? Any public comment on this? Ms. Bart.
Nicole Bart, Stewart County resident. Marshall, I heard you ask the question on the number of employees for communications. Can I also ask for the number of employees for the Sheriff's Department, please?
The Sheriff's Office is 37.5 employees. There's a half-timer.
Okay, and then for community development?
Could you speak up? I can't hear you.
Seven.
Community development.
Seven.
Okay. And then out of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, out of the 10 terminations, what were the termination, you have a Pareto of the term reasons?
No, I can't talk about that.
So you can't say moving?
No.
Or anything like that?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. Because we used to collect that data all the time. Okay. Or can you talk about what the percentage of involuntary terms are versus voluntary?
I would rather not. Anytime you're dealing with adverse labor relations, especially in a small organization, it's easy to point to. I start going down things like that, even without names, and then you say, ah, look at that department and that person. So absolutely not.
Right.
It is better to weigh on the side of, you know, being protected and covering ourselves and just answer questions like that. And the idea of this today was really just to provide that snapshot.
And Nicole, before you jump into, you know, and I'm sure you appreciate the answer with your background, but I would also add, you know, one of the reasons why not to go into the voluntary versus involuntary, in addition to the identity, potential identity breach that, you know, could happen is, you know, there are attorneys out there, and I'm not going to name them or throw them under the bus, although I'd like to, you know, that will take a voluntary resignation and try to warp it into a constructive discharge, and that's a kind of
something. And I understand that. What I'm trying to get at is, you know, numbers are wonderful. I love them. You know that. But not all terminations are created equal.
Sure.
Some are desired. Some are undesired. Some are voluntary. Some are involuntary. And, you know, just just putting the numbers out there, you know, it could go, wow, this is really shocking. But again, not all terminations are created equal. They're not, you know, there's desired termination where, yes, it does cost money, but then the cost of keeping is more expensive in the long run. So I understand with small numbers, small community, you can't do that, but I just wanted to, you know, ask the question.
And while I wouldn't debate what you're saying, I would tell you, globally as an organization, because every termination has to not only go through either the elector or the department head, it has to be vetted by Austin, it has to be approved by me. Oftentimes, if we sense that there are potential problems, we will involve counsel on some. But I would just to argue or debate one point with you, like I like to do, is no terminations are desirable. You know, I mean, some are an unfortunate necessity, but in the end, I think everybody in here that is a supervisor looking at the chief and the BC and the sheriff, you know, it's a failure. You know, it's a failure as an organization. It's a failure all the way around. So desire is probably a word that, you know.
I agree with you on that, however.
Okay, how I know legally that we're getting close to the line is I start getting a stomach ache. I have a stomach ache right now.
All right.
So could we just stop this discussion as
just one Austin, it's not a specific point.
Okay, but as Austin has said, this is all confidential information. General stats are fine, but when you start getting close in a small jurisdiction, we could have potential problems. So I'm just
kind of.
Any other public comment? Hearing none? Okay. What do you say we go ahead and we move on? We'll move on to item number 11, and we're going to recess as the county commissioners and convene as the 474 Fire Protection District Board, which pushes us on to item number 12. This is discussion only, again, with no possible action. The Human Resources Department will provide a general statistical update of the personnel actions, terminations, and turnover occurring since July the 1st, 2015 for the Story County Fire Protection District. Mr. Osborne.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, all of the statistics that I talked about below, as far as looking at ourselves as a global organization with 136 staff, are the same. Everything is the same, so I'm not going to bother going through that again. The number, and I'll explain some details here, for the Story County Fire District had 5 terminations. Those were mostly probationary employees that didn't meet probationary. Either they left or they didn't continue on or they're terminated involuntarily, one or the other. Regardless, they worked under a grant that may have expired. But in order to keep the data clear in this and not have hundreds of different variables, it's just raw data. It's did they make it one way or another or not? Yes, no, all the way down the line. And 5 is the number for that. I did exclude all seasonal firefighters and 9-month and 6-month firefighters as they do come and go completely freely. And the fire chief would argue and have a good argument potentially, as well as the sheriff on the other one with some of the others, is that of the 5, if they work under a grant and they're expected not to continue employment beyond the grant, then they should probably expect to take employment otherwise, another place of opportunity comes. And so that doesn't necessarily mean this is a bad thing, but this is the number that's there.
You know, and I guess I'll go ahead and chime in a couple of things to make sure that, you know, the commission is aware. And, of course, Chief Higgs and VC Nevin are here if you have specific questions. But, you know, we work closely with the sheriff and equally as close with the fire district. And as our most substantial employers with staff numbers, I will tell you there are unique circumstances for each of these, but in the fire district, the factors that go into a voluntary termination, if you will, in many cases, can be very small, very minute. You know, I know the chief certainly can address where we fall in our pay scales, you know, but oftentimes, you know, a lot of our firefighters are residents of Reno Sparks. That's just where they come up from. And, you know, then when you got three fire agencies in Reno Sparks that I'm aware of, and there probably are more that I'm not, but you've got Reno Fire, Sparks Fire, and Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. And, you know, we don't pay the same for a Reno City Manager as you pay for a Story County Manager. And I'm pretty sure we probably don't pay the same for a Reno firefighter and perhaps a Sparks firefighter. And, you know, you get that, even if it's a small difference, you know, we're lagging the market by 10% or something, you know, to be able to work in your home, near your home, stay home. I mean, you know, look at Jeff. He's a consummate example of he had a bright career with NDF and he threw it in the garbage to come to work for us. Just kidding, Jeff. But, you know, so that's a major factor. Some of them are career steps. You know, I mean, we're small enough, though, that we have limited opportunities to make it into the captain ranks, from the captain ranks to the battalion chief ranks, and from the battalion chief ranks, which we have three, you know, to the chief rank, there's only one of those. So I think some of those opportunities are out there. And the weird little nuance that I find interesting with some of our terminations is the fact that if you're a firefighter for the city of Reno or city of Sparks, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, that's pretty much what you do. You might be a first responder on an accident and administer basic first aid or CPR or something that you're trained to do, but you're not paramedic level. You're not dealing with all the blood and guts and gory stuff all the time, you know, particularly in Reno Sparks, that might be appealing to some career firefighters as opposed to Story County and all of the rurals in Nevada, to the best of my knowledge, that are a hybrid between firefighting services and emergency medical services. Reno Sparks has RMSA. You know, we don't. So, you know, as the chief has said all along, you know, we're almost an ambulance company that drives around in fire trucks in many cases, because if you look at the proportional load of fire calls versus EMS calls, I get a guess it's somewhere around 80-20 or somewhere in that region. But, you know, and that can be appealing to some of these guys to go ahead and jump ship as well.
Jack, do you have any questions?
Go ahead. So, I guess I don't know. Thanks for coming up, Gary. But does, in fact, Reno Sparks pay a higher pay scale?
Let me try to answer that in a roundabout way. We have five comparison agencies, actually seven comparison agencies. We've taken all seven of those comparison agencies that we've used for the last 20-plus years and agreed to pay to the 80th percentile of those comparisons, of that median. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, kind
hopefully.
Of.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I can
we're,
see.
We're paying to about the 80th percentile.
I don't know if it's a regional pay scale.
No.
No, okay. No. Even if we did pay the same as Reno and Sparks, there's the people living down there that work up here are spending $100 a month in gas.
Right.
So, yeah, if they can get a job closer to home, that's a $100 bill in their pocket.
Absolutely. And Austin will probably have a stroke here, but I think it's an important thing that you determine maybe for the next meeting what are resignations versus separations versus terminations. In my world, I think that's a critical differential. You can shake your head. That's okay.
Well, legally, you can't do it because it's
common. You can define that. Sure you can. There's three different types of separation.
Maybe especially for the big employers where the numbers are high enough. It's just like trying to do an employee survey of a department of one. You know, if
right.
I ask Sherry what she thinks, my information is going to be pretty obvious. If you do an employee survey in a department of 37 or whatever the numbers are, it's a little different. We'll work through that as staff. The other thing I neglected to say that I want to add, too, is, you know, for the average intelligent bear out there, whether I cross the line or not, according to counsel, I'm not going to worry too much about it. But I think it's important when you look at the termination process, there's a staff that speaks volumes for itself. I don't know the sheriff's numbers. If he'd like to speak to those, that's fine. But in the fire district, I've been involved in the grievance and arbitration process for 15 years, I think, since the contract was established, even when I was the former sheriff. And I have to tell you, to the best of my knowledge, in those 15 years, we've had one arbitration. And that one, you know, we couldn't avoid. But when it was heard before an arbitrator, the arbitrator said Story County acted properly and prudently and upheld the decision. So, you know, I mean, that probably tells you how few of these are really hardball terminations as opposed to anything else. Because we'd be having, not for the probationary ones, I get that, but for the others, we'd be having probably a greater number of arbitrations and grievances through the process.
Yeah, and even in the since the inception of the union and collective bargaining for the fire district anyway, there's literally been one arbitration and one grievance filed ever since it's been initiated. But I think there is a big differential, and you can define that. I mean, it's easily defined. What is a termination versus what is a resignation? And I think that's a really important factor. I'm not going to go into it because
Thank
I know you'll
you.
Kill me, but I think that's an important factor when you're looking at this because that tells you if you're losing employees and what reasons.
We'll talk about this later.
Sure.
Last,
yeah.
We'll ask any questions?
I have a question.
All right. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, why don't we go ahead and we'll move on now to item number 13. And this will be the discussion on possible action, a mutual aid agreement between Story County Fire Protection District and Sparks Fire Department. Mr. Nevin.
For the record, Jeff Nevin. This is actually two documents, the annual operating plan and the mutual aid agreement, same as with all the rest of the agencies that we have agreements with. The annual operating plan, as it states, is an annual agreement that comes forward. Just for any changes, staff, couple numbers, anything like that, and that gets yearly signatures. The change for the mutual aid agreement, where it used to, expire every 5 years, this will have no expiration date once it's signed, if it's signed, and it can be terminated by either party at any time. So.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead and ask it.
Are there any fundamental changes in existing agreements or operating plans?
No. Okay. No, that was really the only change that there was the expiration date on the mutual agreement.
Thank you. Any public comment regarding this renewal of the mutual aid agreement between Story County and Sparks? No? I think so.
You find it?
Here's it. Okay, right there at the bottom there. So can I have a motion to approve this?
I'll move to approve the renewal of the Story County Fire Protection District and Sparks Fire Department Mutual Aid Agreement.
I'll second that motion.
Move to second to approve this mutual aid agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. At this time we're going to adjourn as the 474 Fire Protection District Board. And to reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Moving along now to item number 15. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of a second reading for reliable reloading. Austin Swift, a request for a home-based business general license. Sheriff?
Nice try, Sheriff.
As indicates, it's a home-based business. He's not going to have anybody coming to residence. He's just manufacturing ammunition that will be sold at another location. It's out in the Highlands, my understanding, from the planning, or from planning Austin, that no zoning issues are at hand where there's not going to be any traffic. And he has his federal firearms license allowing him to manufacture ammunition, so should be good to go.
Good to go. All right. Any public comment regarding this this licensing? Hearing none. Call for a motion for approval.
I'll move to approve the second reading for the Reliable Reloading Austin Swift request for a home-based business general license.
I'll second that motion.
And moving to second to approve. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item 16, discussion of possible action. Approval and acceptance of an emergency management performance grant. Award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management in the amount of $17,807 for the emergency management personnel cost, training, contracts, supplies, operating, and equipment. Ms. Nevin.
Thank you, Chairman. Sherry Nevin, for the record. Story County receives on an annual basis these emergency management performance grant funds, as Commissioner McBride stated, from the Nevada Division of Emergency Management. This grant is notoriously known for being late. This particular grant award should have started on October 1st of 2015, and here we are today, August 2nd of 2016. So this grant award will be retroactive to October 1st, 2015, and that really pushes our reporting period. I mean, they want their stuff, like, right away. So this grant is for personnel costs associated with the time that Joe Curtis spends performing emergency management duties. We're also able to use this grant to fund training exercises related to emergency preparedness, some supplies and other operating costs that we have associated with emergency management. So that could be like a satellite phone that we maintain for the office, our phone lines that we have in our emergency operations center, items like that. So like I said, this is an annual grant that we've been getting for many years. It goes back to when Gary was doing emergency management, so we're going back a long time. But this grant comes with a this grant comes with about a 50% match. So we get 50%, and we've got to match that 50%. So
is it the same amount every year?
No, it varies. There is a funding formula that kind of plays into there. Of course, we get a lot less than Washoe, Clark, all those, just because we have a...
There's 10 months in arrears. Have we already spent this money?
Oh, absolutely. and then they operate on that premise. I mean, that's the way everyone works, you know. So.
And I'm pretty sure, although I'd have to defer to Hugh or Jennifer or Jesse, as I recall, because of the historic timing on this grant, we pretty much budget for the salary for Joe, the less than full-time salary. To the best of my knowledge, I don't believe we ever budget for the grant because we find out so late, you never know for sure. So it really will help in the general fund be higher than anticipated ending fund balances for this year, I guess.
Right. We always leave it out there as a placeholder, you know, this particular grant, but like I say, we never know when we're going to get it. So.
Very good. Any questions for Sherry? No. Any public comment regarding this item? Okay, motion to approve.
I move to approve the Emergency Management Performance Grant, EMPG, award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management in the amount of $17,807 for emergency management personnel costs, training contracts, supplies, operating, and equipment, and authorization for the Commission Chairman or his designee to sign all associated grant documentation.
I'll second that motion.
They moved to second to approve and accept this grant. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 17, discussion of possible action. Approval and acceptance of the Department of Homeland Security Grant Award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management in the amount of $8,600 for the facilitation of Quad County Hazardous Materials Exercise.
Again, Sherry Nevin for the record. Story County applied for grant funds to assist us with facilitating our annual Quad County Hazardous Material Training Exercise. Joe Curtis mentioned that earlier today. This exercise is an annual training event that we host here in Story County, and we include our partners from Carson, Douglas, Lyon counties, as well as various other state and federal agencies. This year, we'll be holding the exercise in the Industrial Center, working with AZZ Galvanizing. These grant funds will allow us to procure services from a contractor to facilitate the entire exercise process. So it's, you know, putting together these exercises is kind of a specialized task for us. So as part of the grant application, we had to, of course, solicit input from contractors who perform these types of services. So we reached out to a couple of known contacts for that, and it looks as though we will be working with All Clear Fire Training and Consulting and Jim Powell. It's hard to find someone to do this type of work for us.
How much you done work with him before?
We have in the past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty good.
Yep. Questions for Sherry?
So the AZZ Galvanizing, that's this year's
host for us, yeah.
Location, they open up location. Do you always try to create the hazard related to that company?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So we sat down with them several months back, and just to kind of give them a background of what we're looking to do and seek their participation, and they were open arms, willing to host us. So this will be on a Saturday, and as we understand, their production is very minimal that day. So they'll allow us basically full access to their facility to come in. We do a morning training session over at the fire station, and then the afternoon is over at actual on-site.
So they benefit as well?
Absolutely. It gets their folks trained, working with our responders and testing their plans.
Thank you.
Very good. Any public comment?
Only that this is another, even though one is late and the other was essentially promised, this is another $26,000 you can add to that huge grant list that I think I summarized a meeting or two ago that, I applaud Sherry, I applaud Joe, and everybody else involved in the process, but not only for putting these grants together, but making sure they happen properly, and then on the backside, making sure we comply with all the covenants and conditions. So, great job.
Thank you.
It is okay. Motion for approval.
I'll move to approve the Department of Homeland Security grant award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management in the amount of $8,600 for the facilitation of a Quad County Hazardous Materials Exercise and authorization for the Commission Chairman or his designee to sign all associated grant documentation.
I'll second that motion.
Been moved and second for approval. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 18, discussion of possible action, approval of business licenses, second reading.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of Community Development, we would ask that you continue items L and M, that is Aqua Metals Reno Inc. and Thrive Market. There still is some construction and inspections going on, so to be continued, L and M.
Okay, Commissioners, I get a motion to continue items L and M to a further date.
I would make the motion to approve items L and M.
Continue those items.
A future date.
Yeah.
I'll second that motion.
Moving to second to continue items L and M to a future date. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners. And Community Development also asks that we approve the following licenses. And before I do that, I just want to make note of something I was not aware of when the sheriff presented on Mr. Swift. In case there were any questions, as this is a Highlands-based business, our planning director did confirm with me that no special use permit is required, even though this is a Highlands residential business, because there is no foot traffic and no business really occurring spontaneously there. Community Development asks that we approve items A through K. That would be Fulcrum Sierra Biofuels, LLC. Just as a quick aside, this is only for their feedstock facility up near the waste management facility. Pyro Guys, the Tiburetti Company, LLC, J.T. Thorne & Son, Yem's Produce and Seafood, Express Services, Inc., Acculogic Limited, Bryant Surveys, Inc., a SanDisk company, HP Enterprises, Thermo Electron North America, LLC, Pro, and Neutron, LLC, all to be approved A through K.
Okay. We have a motion to approve items A through K.
I so move.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Discussion?
Yeah, again, I'm Mark Joseph Phillips for the record, a Virginia City resident. Item 18B, I believe there's been a typo, and I've presented Chairman McBride with entity search for Power Guys Incorporated, showing the registered agent's address is 14410. So I believe that this is a typo, and I'm hoping that the public record will be corrected.
We will verify what our records reflect and correct it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mark.
Any other public comment? All right. With that being said, I have a motion and a second to approve items A through K, and we will go ahead and check on verify the correct address on that. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to the next item, number 19, public comment. Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. Yeah.